Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you. Keith and Seymour.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Injury, Seymour.
All right. Good morning. And it was nice meeting both of you guys yesterday at the car show.
Very nice meeting you as well.
Oh, yes. You were great. And thank you.
Yeah, you were with, I believe, Mr. Haynes. Mine is not nearly as bad as the last ones I've heard, but...
Not a competition.
Remember when we were kids, we had those... Yeah, remember when we were kids, we had those, I think they were called Estes rocket kits that
you
blast them off in the air and they... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yes. You'd shoot them off and never find them again. Yeah.
Those were awesome.
Exactly,
they were so great.
You spent so much time making them look like a rocket and like, where the hell did it go?
Yeah.
Yep, we lost four of them. Yep.
They had that little tiny rod for a launch pad. Well, that was my... That was my eye injury. I went to bend down, go get the rocket because something happened.
No.
The rod went in my eye, and for like 2.5 weeks later, I was wearing a patch to school and getting made fun of.
Oh, my God. You shish kebabbed your eye.
Yeah.
Ah.
Now it's been worse. Yeah, you had your head over there, and you launched a rocket and it went in my mouth.
Yeah,
I got a guy with a rocket in his mouth and a thing through his eye. So how's that model rocketing thing going? Good?
Yeah.
Wow. That had to hurt.
It was terrible.
Yep.
Did you? What,
all right, guys.
What
thank you.
All right. Thank you, man.
He's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Stuff I got to do.
He's got to get this rod out of his eye.
Right.
Oh. That's one of those when it happens. You first realize.
You're in shock.
This is bad.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Did
and
I just do that?
And the pain comes later.
Right.
And it comes. It's. Full on.
Right.
Well, even if you get the smallest thing in your eye, it bothers you the rest of the day.
Like a gnat.
Yeah. Or a hair or something. I can't even imagine.
A like, metal rod.
Yeah, a real injury.
The pain is kind of like the beginning of Roundabout, but yes, you're...
Yes. Barbara and Seymour.
Hey, how are you?
Good, hello. Thank you.
So my eye injury is, to me, stupid, but it actually happened. I am one of those unseen people that work in a grocery store, but I'm in the back room.
Okay.
And I shuck corn all the time.
Huh.
I'm the one who makes all the packaged corn.
You're
so
a shucker.
I'm
shucking
my corn.
That's all you do every day.
I shuck corn and cut corn watermelon.
Wow.
So
oh, wow.
She's a mother shucker,
fur from the corn went into my eye, and I kept rubbing it and rubbing it because it was driving me nuts, obviously. And all of a sudden, someone says, you know, your eye is, like, literally out of your head. And I went, what?
Wait, go back. I missed something.
Oh,
something
yeah.
AJ said mother shucker. And I, as I was chuckling at that in my head, I missed how this happened.
She was shucking. Something got into her eye, and she rubbed it.
I cut the top of the ear of corn, and then I get the other part where all the hair is, and I pull it back to actually show the corn. And... all the silk went into my eye.
Right.
So, of course, I started rubbing it.
Right. Itchy.
And it tore my cornea and my eye came out.
Ooh. Wait. What?
You call it corn. I call it
eye
injury. It
just fell out.
Because my eye fell out. Ooh. They had to put a cup on my head and on my face and then bring me to the hospital.
Right. Just tilt your head backwards. Don't move forwards.
Your eye fell
so
out.
So I ended up having major surgery.
Yeah.
And I had 29 stitches and glue in my eye for 3 months. And then 6 months later, had to have cataracts done because it created a cataract on my eye.
You know what's funny?
To this day, I only have 10% sight in that one eye.
Nowadays, when I see the prices of food, my eyes pop out of my head, too.
it was not a nice... I was devastated.
Wow.
Do you still shuck?
I only have 10% sight in that one eye now, still.
Yeah, you still a shucker?
Was there a lawsuit?
No, they paid all my bills, so I didn't do any, you know.
Right.
Okay.
I was nice. I've been working for the same company for 26 years, so I didn't want to sue them.
Now
I still actually am in the car getting ready to go into work now.
Yeah, they call you Big Eye now.
Yeah.
There and you go.
I think Ashley asked if you're still a shucker.
Yeah.
I still am. That's where I'm going right now.
All right, be careful.
Brave woman.
Watch your eyes.
I actually wear goggles now because I'm too afraid it's going to happen.
Right. That's what I was going to ask.
And watch the watermelon when you cut it.
I kind of feel like I should just be wearing mine
all the
time.
Yeah.
She shucked her eyes out.
She did. Right?
Yep. Yo, shuck your eye out, kid.
Literally did.
Oh, man. One hell of a shucker.
Right.
That's a new one. I've never heard that one.
It's like shucker to the system.
I never knew corn was so dangerous.
I had no idea. I didn't know. No.
Oh, yeah.
Bro. Approach
she
the corn carefully.
The eyes right out of her head.
Right.
That's a good shuck right there.
It's a hell of a shucker.
Wow.
That's it.
All right. Thank you. You're in the
Thank
running,
you.
Barbara.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Wendy in Manchester.
Hi. How are you?
Hi.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. I have a story. I was about 8 or 9 years old, and I was at my aunt's house. And when I was young, I used to climb trees a lot. You know, okay. It's a neighborhood thing.
Yeah.
So, but I was visiting my aunt's house, and it was a cherry tree. And I climbed partway up, and I got, like, towards the middle where the tree started branching out, like, and a piece of cherry bark got in my eye, and I couldn't get down, so I had to wait for somebody, because I was outside, kind of, everybody else was kind of in the house or running around somewhere else, and I had to wait for someone to come out to help me get down off the tree, out of the tree.
Could use George Washington that moment.
I couldn't see.
Yeah.
I couldn't see at all because it was making my eyes all itchy and watery, and I couldn't see anything. So I was like, I couldn't even see to get down.
Strawberry's so much easier now. Just reach down and pick one up.
Right?
Yep.
Well, you're in the running. Thank you.
Thank you.
Glad you're okay. We had a pear tree in our backyard. Lived in a 3-family house.
Yeah.
That pear tree, I think, provided more injuries than fruit for people to eat. Because those pears, when they're just growing, they are hard as rocks.
They are rocks.
They are rocks.
Yeah.
They're great throwing mechanisms.
Yeah. Get some good distance.
Very solid.
There was a
kid running in the backyard, and I had such a
Are you
arm,
peg him? Nice.
Hit him right in the head and knock him off his feet. It was hysterical.
Right.
Until his mother chased me with a bow and arrow.
Oh.
Interesting choice of weapon.
Yeah. My dad said, don't mess with the new tenants downstairs. She's a professional, whatever
Archer?
It's called. Archer.
Archer, yeah. Right.
I'm like, okay,
right,
whatever.
Right.
What is she, Robin Hood?
She actually chased me.
Oh, my God.
With a bow and arrow. And she said, stop right there. And I turned around, like, whoa, she's got an aim on me.
Right.
Do you have footage of that?
You could have been the guy who invented the bow through the head like Steve Martin wore.
Yeah.
But that, the pear tree.
Yeah.
So I'm downstairs one day, and I'm having a pear fight with my brother's friend, Mike.
Pear fight.
Normal pear fight.
These are the things that kids think of when they're bored. A pear fight.
Four cell phones.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Was there ever a partridge in it?
So, you know, you got to go over to the tree, and you load up, and you carry as many as you can.
Yeah,
and you take
ammo.
A position.
Yeah.
And all I remember is Mike's arm. And his hand really...
You just saw the motion.
You saw the wing,
Yeah, and then just stars.
Oh, like in the cartoons?
Right in the eye with a full blast.
Oh.
Speed pair to the friggin' eye. And
speed
it,
pair?
Speed pair.
As opposed to a curve pair.
Right.
You know, a curve ball.
What happened? Speed pair.
Stars, and I fell on the ground. So I think I passed out for half a second.
Did you say fruit salad?
I got up.
Yeah.
Oh.
All you heard was the pears going down.
Right.
That's right.
You saw cans of dough.
They're all rolling down the street.
Cans of dough.
Secret Service agent sent home from South Korea.
Oops.
After a drunken incident.
Oh, see, you can't do that.
Two Secret Service employees were shipped back to the U.S. from South Korea last week following an alcohol-fueled confrontation with a local cab driver ahead of President Biden's trip to the country.
Well, if there's shipping involved, at least 3 or 4 weeks.
This is according to multiple reports. ABC News reported Friday that an agent had an armed physical security specialist assigned to go to Seoul to help prepare for Biden's trip. Went out to dinner, had a couple of drinks, hit multiple bars, got drunk, and got into a heated argument with a cabbie.
Oh, fares?
Police were eventually called to the scene. No one was arrested, but
error in judgment.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys got to go home now.
Yes. Yeah, can't do that.
Yeah.
The incident took place outside the hotel where Biden stayed.
Oh.
So, like, not a good, not good. None of this is good.
Luckily, he slept through it.
On the phone right now is a former Secret Service agent. Joe Russo.
Oh.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Thanks for coming
back. Do we
back.
Use his real name or what?
Executive Vice President of Safety and Security for TNM USA. We're linked up on the radio station website. Well, if you're supposed to be Secret Service, right. I guess you don't want to be getting into fights in other countries.
Right, it's a secret.
Yeah, well, it's never a good look when something like that occurs, especially overseas.
What's your take on this?
You know, I think, first of all, just to be clear, as you said, it was one agent and one PSS. And just so everybody understands, this is the group of people who arrive usually 2 to 3 days prior to the visit. So obviously President Biden was not even there yet.
Yeah.
And they're not part of the seasoned advance team from the president's actual detail or the intelligence division advance folks, because these agents and specialists come in really on a military transport that's usually bringing the vehicles over from here. And they're there to supplement and stand post, probably more on a perimeter position than anything, during the visit. Problem is, you know, they get there a few days early. They have a couple of down days. They do get a briefing immediately by the advance team that's been on the ground there for 8 days already and by the local State Department residence security officer as to, you know, the do's and don'ts in the country, as well as any threats and risks that might be associated with the visit. And the Secret Service, since 2012, when we had the incident in Cartagena, Colombia, with the Secret Service personnel, heavy drinking, prostitution. And, of course, that always comes up when something like this happens.
Yes.
Even though it was 10 years ago.
Right. We don't forget
You know, ever since then, you know, they had a renewed commitment to the Secret Service, much like other federal agencies, to hold employees accountable for their quote-unquote off-duty behavior, where really you're really never off-duty when once you land on the ground overseas, you have to consider yourself on duty. So, you know, I know they acted swiftly and quickly. They moved them out of there. The president came and went. His trip ended yesterday successfully without incident, which is the most important thing. And you know, it is what it is.
How many members of the Secret Service are there?
The Secret?
in general?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like army?
I would say, no, it's actually, compared to most federal agencies, the Secret Service, as far as the agents' positions go, it's fairly small. I think probably between 3,000 and 4,000 now.
Oh, wow.
That's worldwide. A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was there back in the 80s to 2004, when I first joined in the 80s, there was only 1,500 Secret Service agents in the world. You know, wow. The FBI probably has that between New York and D.C. So it's much, much smaller. But then you have a lot of support staff. You know, you have a lot of folks behind the scenes that are not agents. And, of course, you have the uniform division, which we've talked
right.
about before on the station.
Yeah, I've seen them. They're more obvious.
Right.
Where do you recruit these agents from? Not the Navy SEALs, because, like, the agents that are standing around a president don't look that jacked. They look more like business people who can
blend
you your ass quickly.
Yes, yeah. And efficiently.
You know, that's a great question. When I first joined back in the 80s, they were primarily recruiting from the ranks of law enforcement. I was a former police officer in the city of New Rochelle here in New York.
Oh, interesting. Thank you.
But over the years, because of the responsibilities, as I talked about before, you know, the dual mission of the Secret Service, investigations and protection, they started recruiting from, you know, the ranks of people who might have been accountants or lawyers, much like the FBI does, because you needed that expertise as well. And then I'd say probably late 90s into early 2000s, and actually even into today, they had a heavy recruitment from the military. So, yes, they do have some former SEALs and other specialists from the military. So, really, it varies, and it's very diverse now.
What's that training like? Like, you have to do all kinds of scenarios where, like, the car's going down the road and then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
There must be some kind of, like, fake city set up, right, where you kind of go through these drills.
Like a virtual reality
like firefighters
thing?
Do and police do.
Sure. Sure. So, you know, the Secret Service training is very intense. You know, your first 10 weeks, you go down to the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Brunswick, Georgia, where you train with other federal agencies other than the FBI and DEA, who have their own training facility in Quantico, Virginia. And then after 10 weeks of training with others down there, and that is intense physical firearms and, of course, classroom to learn federal law. Then you go to Secret Service School in Beltsville, Maryland for 10 weeks, and that's exactly where they have Hogan's Alley set up, a whole city scenario where you can do AOPs, assault on principle, tactical training. They put you through everything, through protective driving school, and then, of course, the training is ongoing in the Secret Service.
Don't they teach you like how to drive like fast backwards?
Everything.
Yeah, right? You do. They call those the J turns, right? To escape something threatening while you're driving a vehicle. You do a lot of tactical driving, and with the actual vehicles themselves, which are armor. You know, big difference driving those things.
Yeah, swinging around. Yeah,
and than a regular car. Wow. So yeah, they do all that. And then when you go to a protective detail later on in your career, usually you'll get down to the president or vice president's detail in 7 to 9 years.
Wow.
You know, they put you through intense training again, specifically for the protective detail.
I think that there has to be a level of concentration that normal people don't have. Because you have to sit through a long speech.
But you got to keep an eye on it.
You can't be like, oh, what's for dinner?
Yeah. You can't daydream.
You have to be completely aware. And when they're looking into the crowds, what are they looking for? I mean, obviously, weapons or whatever. But is there some sign?
Like
the person's not paying attention. Yeah. They're looking around a lot.
Right.
Are there that kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. Beads of sweat in the forehead.
Yeah, so the first part is, you know, it's a zero-fail mission. You have to be on your game every minute, which is another reason why you really shouldn't be going out and partying a couple of days before a visit. Not that that's against rules, because it's a couple of days in advance, but anyway. And then as far as what you look for, yeah, it's all those things. Suspicious activity, somebody wearing excess clothing in the summer, somebody appearing nervous up near the front of the rope line. You know, you really have a lot of things you're looking at. And for a presidential visit, you also have agents undercover in the crowd. So you can communicate with them if you're looking at the crowd and say, hey, you know, there's a person in a specific area that we need you to check out before the president hits the rope line.
What about that time when, remember, President Bush was at the podium and some guy threw his shoes at him?
Yeah, right.
One at a time.
Yeah,
you keep an eye for stuff like that too, right? Like that guy gets arrested, obviously.
Yeah, that was in a Mideast country. I don't know specifically remember where it was. And it was actually a local press conference. So you had local press in there from the country itself. And that person happened to be admitted into the room and was allowed in the room because he was part of media. And he decided to take off his sandals and toss them at the president.
Right.
And then didn't the president say, you missed me?
Right. He dodged
he had
pretty good.
Reflexes.
Yeah. He dodged very well. Yeah.
It was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
He was good.
He put his hand up to deflect one of them, and then, of course, the agents got him. But that's very unusual. First of all, people in that room won't have anything real dangerous, but, you know, you're not going to have them take off their sandals to go in the room. So maybe now they do. I don't know.
Former Secret Service agent Joe Russo's on. When you're going through your presidential detail training, do they go over the Kennedy footage and the Reagan attempted assassination footage and kind of teach you from there, like, this is what we don't do anymore?
Right.
Sure. So all of those things were learning experiences. And when you're in Secret Service school, you go over every attempted and successful assassination back to Lincoln. So, obviously, after every one of those things, Secret Service has changed a lot of its policy and protocol, and you learn from every one of them, you know, and it's something you see. And as a result, they came up with ways to mitigate those things, such as, you know, President Reagan was walking outside of the Hilton Hotel, and they allowed unscreened crowd with some press, but also some public, you know, within close proximity. And that's where Inglis was when he fired the gun. He was only, you know, feet away. So that no longer happens. Ever since then, the president always arrives and departs under a covered arrival departure area. So you'll never see him getting out of the car, whether it's a physical structure or a tent that they put up whatever it is, you will have no visual of the president's arrival and departure in most cases.
I will say, though, that secret, those agents acted so quickly. That all happened so fast. And yeah. they had him in that car and out of there. And then the weapons that were under their coat. I'm like, holy crap.
Right. That's some boom sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah, some boom sticks. Yeah, big time.
Yeah, that was 1981, and his detail leader was Jerry Parr, who made the decision on the way back to the White House to divert to George Washington Hospital. So he saved President Reagan's life just by making that decision.
There's going to be nightmare areas to go, right? Like, what's the worst nightmare area to go where, you know, a president's going to be somewhere and you got to keep an eye on everything?
Well, just Ukraine was a nightmare, right?
Right, I would think that. But, I mean, like, in the United States, like, you know, like a ballpark or something like that.
A bad neighborhood in the U.S.?
Well, no, like, you know, if they go to throw out the first pitch or something like that.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Gotta be a nightmare.
That's a good one. That's a nightmare scenario, right?
Yeah, so we talked about that, right? So when President Bush came to Yankee Stadium to throw out the first pitch in Game 3 of the 2001 World Series following 9/11, I was actually the supervisor, New York field office supervisor, who participated in that visit. And I told you guys last time, we actually dressed up an umpire, put him on the field as a Secret Service agent who was nearby out there, and President Bush also wore a ballistic coat.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's one of the things he bragged about,
right?
Because he made the pitch and he was wearing the...
He would just on, yes.
It is impressive.
It is impressive.
It is.
Yeah. Everybody usually bounces it off the ground.
Right.
You know, just from preparation, you know, as you know, even on that day, we put everybody in that stadium, workers and fans, through metal detection. So, and, you know, you have all your assets up on the roof and everywhere else. So you're pretty confident that you've covered all the bases before he takes the mound in a situation like that.
Yeah.
But of course, you're never 100% sure. But because of your preparation, you're feeling very confident that all the bases were covered. No pun intended there.
You know, through circumstance, we have former Secret Service agent Joe Russo on. We're linked up to all his stuff on the radio station website. By a weird occurrence, I found out something that you probably already knew, that anyone who's near the vice president or the president, at least most people,
okay,
think, wow, I could do something right now.
They have that thought.
Is this something you guys are aware of?
Yeah, but again, what could they possibly do? They're going to have to. It's going to have to be with their hands or whatever they're holding, and you know, they've been screened, and you know, depending on where exactly it's happening, if it's at a rope line, you know, you have several agents surrounding the president who would react very quickly, and again, have people in the crowd. So, yes, they could think that, but obviously, as that protectee gets closer, I'm sure they're thinking it's probably not a great idea when they start seeing the physical assets. And don't forget, there's assets that they don't see there.
Well, you would be throwing your whole life away, and people who are around a president or a vice president are screened, so they're not people who are going to throw their entire life away.
Right.
But I was across the table from then Vice President Cheney, and it was just a table length, and I had a pen in my hand, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm just a normal person, but I thought, how dumb are they to let someone like me, you know, not dumb, but Senator Lieberman vouched for me.
Yeah.
But then I was speaking to someone who was recently at a ceremony where the president spoke, and I said, did you think, because I thought, and he said, yeah, I thought I could be like that Dave Chappelle guy, the guy who jumped up on stage, and I could just plow him over right
Three
now.
Steps, no one's going to be able to get in between me and him by then. Yeah.
I kept my hands, you could see them the entire time.
No, isn't that wild, though? I mean, you must know this. When people get that close to, like, the most famous and protected person on the planet, that thought just runs through the brain. It's almost a natural occurrence.
I wonder.
So that's what those are the incidents that made me extremely nervous when I was in charge of former President Clinton's detail, because those are not screened crowds, right? So, you know, we would go to places like Africa, South Africa, to visit Nelson Mandela, and you'd have 20,000 people out there to see them. And then, of course, as President Clinton always did, because he was social, he wanted to, you know, shake the hands of the people and get close. So, and that in those cases, of course, those people have not been screened. And so you really have to be on your game watching, because anybody up front could have a knife or even a gun. I mean, so those are
like Hillary.
Very trying and nervous times. And, you know, you try to talk them out of it. But at that point, as the former president, President Clinton wasn't having it. He wanted to go out and shake hands. And that's what he was going to do.
That's wild. That's wild. We talked about this the last time you were on. Clinton, he had a Mustang convertible.
Yeah.
And he drove, he wanted to drive the car. They wanted him to drive it. And he drove it down like an air, you know,
airstrip.
Like airstrip.
Yeah.
And they put in the car right next to him a guy with the same hair as him.
Right.
And I thought, well, we all know why this guy's in the car right now.
Yeah. Exactly right.
Yeah.
And he wants to drive
and
the car.
And I thought the last time. Oh, really?
Your coincidence. Yeah, that was Dave Carpenter, who was in charge of his detail. He happened to have the same hairstyle. Yeah. That was the vehicle that they took out of the parade that he was in as governor in Arkansas. And they actually had that in his house up here in Chappaqua. And he took it out in Chappaqua one day and it broke down. So it was probably the only time they let him drive that as well. So, yeah, that was just a coincidence. That was Dave Carpenter. And everybody joked over the years that, that Dave looked so much like him. He might have been a stand-in for him.
Like a decoy.
Right.
Wow.
It's interesting. When I saw that, I thought, wow, this is probably the first time a president's been in public in a convertible since Kennedy. I'm shocked that they let this happen.
Another Ford product, yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, a little different circumstances, but absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. Well, Joe, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for your service to the country.
Yes.
And we're linked up to all of your stuff. Executive Vice President of Safety and Security for TNM USA and former Secret Service agent Joe Russo. Thank you. Hartford Fire Department had a busy weekend.
Busy, busy, busy.
Four adults and one child had to be rescued from an apartment building fire.
Oh.
Well. Yep.
Scary.
Hartford Fire Chief Rodney Barco on the show right now. Good morning, and thank you for everything you do.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Nice job.
Yep.
What happened?
Kudos.
Well, so in the afternoon at 1223 270 Preston Street, we had a working fire that started in the kitchen. Rescued five people, four adults, one child. And
wow.
The fire was actually contained to the kitchen, but due to the heavy smoke condition, we had to assist some folks with getting out of the third floor apartment.
Yeah.
Was there someone trying to cook something?
Right. Bad meal.
I think someone might have left something on the stove.
Gotcha.
But that fire is still under investigation.
AJ's betting it was the child who left something.
like a toy.
Bacon is hard to cook sometimes.
So you guys roll up on this thing and you hear five people are in an apartment that's on fire. That's got to be scary.
Yeah.
Well, you guys don't get scared, but I mean, it's got to be like, oh boy.
Got to get done.
Unnerving.
Right now. Yeah, move.
Yeah. It's definitely not something we look forward to seeing when we arrive. But
yeah.
The men and women of the Hartford Fire Department are well-equipped, and they've seen it before, and they're used to it. So they handle their jobs very well.
Awesome.
How many people do you send in for something like that? How do you roll up on that, you hear that, you know, you get there, you're like, all right, what do we got?
Yeah.
Okay, we got five people in a building. Okay. Who do you pick? How do you?
Yes.
What do you
mind,
do?
Mind
how does that work?
Right.
It may seem complicated if you haven't done it before, but the men and women of the Hartford Fire Department know their jobs and their roles. So usually when we have a working fire, we send about 36 people, five engines, two trucks, and two district chiefs. And each one of those vehicles has a particular assignment, like first engine goes to the fire floor, second engine backs them up. You know, first truck goes to the roof for ventilation, second truck goes in. Then we have a heavy rescue that does search and rescue. So there's a number of things that need to be accomplished. You know, we might have to secure the utilities, forcible entry. We have to look for the seat of the fire. So there's a number of things that goes on during the working fire.
That's why it looks so organized, because it's chaos.
Yep.
There are trucks everywhere. But you guys just show up, and everyone just starts doing their thing.
Everyone's got their assignment, yeah.
Who to follow, where to go, what to start doing immediately.
Yeah. Right.
Incredible.
I go in the building, I get people. You go on the roof.
Right.
You water the, yeah.
AJ,
wow.
You watch the truck.
See?
Make sure the truck is okay.
Yeah.
Stay
no
here.
Problem.
You guys are very good at the job.
Yep.
No, that's something else.
Yeah.
So. How long did it take from the arrival to the moment you had all five people out?
It took about, from the moment we arrived, it was about 3 minutes.
Wow. That's quick.
That's very fast.
But you can't, you know, take your time in a situation like that, obviously.
No. Do you have to bring breathing stuff in for them, or do you just run in, grab them, and get the hell out?
No, generally we just run in, grab them, get out. It's not a common practice to share our breathing apparatus with the individuals, but in some extreme circumstances, the men and women of the Hartford Fire Department have been known to do it.
Yeah.
They put themselves, you know, first above and beyond their own safety to rescue citizens and visitors of our city. But again, it's not a common practice, because what we don't want to have happen is one of the guys go down and now you can't help anyone.
Yeah,
right. It's like what they say on the plane. Put your mask on first.
Yep.
And you can't not on your child. Right. Put it on you, because you can't help your child if you're passed out.
Right. Kid can't do it for you.
So you had that this weekend, Chief. But also there was a bear in a tree.
That one's different.
Oh, yeah. normally, we don't see animals, wild animals, that far out into the hillside area. But on this particular day, Smokey decided to venture way out into the city. And we was there to assist him along with DEEP.
How do you, so this isn't one you have all rehearsed, like, all right, everyone, you go to this floor, you go to that floor.
Yeah.
This one's like, well, we haven't done this one in a while.
Hey, we got any ideas?
How did you handle that one?
So we're mostly there for assistance to DEEP, and they do their thing in trying to get the bear out of the tree, whether it be a tranquilizer or, you know, they somehow lull him down, and we assist with netting and manpower. And,
oh, wow.
And as you know, it was really hot that day, so we had our we assisted with some hydration as well.
I would think put a picnic basket on the floor somewhere down below, and he'll climb down for the picnic basket.
How did they get the bear down?
I believe, I'm not sure. I think he climbed down on his own, and they might have trained him when he got down.
Wow.
Just to get him out of the neighborhood safely.
We have Hartford Fire Chief on right now, Chief Barco. And we think of you and firefighters as people who put fires out and run into, you know, buildings when they're burning and people are running out. But also there's all these other weird things that you have to do. Like we do stories here where people have to, like, you have to run a grinder if someone gets a body part stuck in a metal ring, or you know, you get caught in a contraption and they call you folks in to, like, all right, figure this one out.
Right. Kid's head goes through the banisters.
Yeah. Like, yes.
That's at the fire department.
Fire department.
We need them.
Yeah.
And just so you know, you can't plug your ears, decide to, you know, work against you when you're pulling your head out. Just so you know.
Yeah, we're definitely an all hazard department. You know, I still live in the city, and so I tell my parents and my brothers, whatever issue you have, call the fire department. We'll come. And if we can't figure it out, we'll get some idea that can. But we've, in my 25 years, I've seen some strange things and assisted with some stranger things. But
Mike, what pops into your head?
Someone can have a jar of pickles.
Well, it's funny that you say someone's stuck in a grinder, because I've seen that where an individual was in between two steel rails. Now, fortunately, he was a very thin man, and we had to get him out. But seeing that image, you would have thought immediately the guy was deceased, but he was not.
Oh,
wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Horrific.
What do you mean? He got stuck in a fence, or he went down and got impaled?
No, he got stuck in between two grinding wheels at the trash plant, like two rollers.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so first you shut the thing off.
Nope.
How do you, what do you do with that? You got to take the wheels, you got to take the whole machine apart. Turn it on and back it.
Yeah.
Put it in reverse.
Yeah.
No. Well, we have our heavy rescue unit. They're disciplined in trench rescue. They're going to be doing structural collapse. So they have a lot of heavy hydraulic equipment that they can use to get the individuals out. So they pretty much use their what you all are familiar with, the jaws of life, to spread the two wheels apart and get the gentleman out.
It's almost like an element of engineering you need to know. Like, all right, we're going to put this here, and now we're going to start putting pressure on it, and all the other things that could go wrong when we're putting pressure on this.
Yeah, you can't say what's the wind.
It's pretty extensive.
Yeah. Let's try this thing!
What you guys have to know, girls.
Yeah, these our heavy rescue unit is, these guys are the best of the best, and they're actually a regional asset, so... we don't just serve Hartford. Sometimes we'll get called out to East Hartford, West Hartford.
Oh, yeah, right.
Enfield. Yeah. We have that equipment at our disposal.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Well, thank you for everything you do, your whole department, and nice job over the weekend.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Can't do it without the men and women of the Hartford Fire Department and Local 760. So thank those guys when you see them, and let them know you appreciate them.
All right. Well, be safe, Chief. Thank you so much. The TikToker says things got out of hand when she was using a 3-inch toy, and then she couldn't get it out.
Oh, hey. No.
There should
be like a release pad, you know, release button or something like that.
She posted an X-ray.
Oh.
Doesn't say... which garage it went into.
Yeah. I think it went to the back garage.
Oh, the back garage.
Yep, yeah. Not the front garage. Went to the back garage. The back door.
Is there any reason to put something in the back garage?
Maybe to itch something? I don't know.
It just doesn't seem like there'd be no... What is the benefit of the back garage?
Oh.
You can hit outside those... of its real purpose.
Well, if you sing, you can hit those high notes. You can talk in vibrato.
I'm confused with that whole thing.
Yeah, no.
I don't know why.
Yeah, it's exit only.
The X-ray doesn't really help me determine which garage it's in.
Really?
Who, what's her name?
Oh, well, the title of the article would do it.
Her handle is S-O-P-H-Z-A Loafs. L-O-A-F-S Loafs.
Pinch a loafs,
push a loaf.
It was the back door. If you were wondering,
it was okay. See?
Oh, it's the back door.
Right, yep. Right. Yeah,
yeah.
There's just no entry.
Yeah, it says it in the headline.
Oh,
She got a vibrator stuck in her butt.
Nice, the butt of old jokes. Ew.
When that happens, do your teeth chatter?
I would think. Yeah, but you sound like those aliens. Yeah, like
it was... Catherine Hepburn. I sound like Catherine Hepburn.
Now I know why she had talked that way.
Has anyone seen my what's that?
Personal massager.
Has anyone seen?
Where are you going, Mr. Arnott? Hey, there you go. She named the African Queen. There you go. Boom.
Would that be a job for the fire department?
It depends.
They have to do the weirdest things.
Yes, they do.
Just another problem solved with butter.
Now, do you do another Jaws of Life on that one or what?
No, you got to use the tongs, though, right?
Right. Not the salad tongs, right?
Yeah.
I eat with those. Yeah, we're good.
Well, they have their special medical tongs, but it's basically the same thing.
Oh, really?
Just not as big.
And I'd rather cook them out of there.
Right. And they try to give it a different word, but it's tongs. Right. We know what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. We know what it is.
Right.
What do you do? How do you get that out?
When you get two guys to pull, yeah.
Have her get on a trampoline.
Right, right.
And hope for the best.
Drink a bunch of coffee.
Gear a bunch of sauerkraut.
Eat a lot of beans.
Fire that sucker right out.
Throw her off the side of a bridge in a bungee cord.
That'd be cool.
That's coming right out.
That'd be cool if you gave her like gaseous food and she launched that sucker like a North Korean missile. Nice. Right out the window.
A 3-inch toy. That's
small.
3-inch. That's why she lost her grip.
I'm guessing it's like one of those, it almost looks like an egg.
Like the pet egg or no?
I don't know. Not from this X-ray.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe 3 inches got stuck in there and the rest is all outside?
Is the whole thing in there?
I'm assuming if she couldn't get
it. If there was any part of it.
Yeah.
Remember that Estes model rocket? Found it.
It honestly looks like one of those dry erase markers with the cap on. From what I'm looking at on the X-ray, like there's a weird little tip on it.
See, I'm picturing like when you get certain cigars in the tube that has a little screw in the end, you know. I'm picturing one of those. Yep.
Have you had any weird things in your butt?
Me, no.
No.
Just a standard thing, a doctor's finger.
Yes, I've had a doctor's finger.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's a no entry area.
No.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Yeah, that's not a place where I want things.
Yeah, no.
I have to put one of those things, like it's like for an enema.
A suppository?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm going to put one of those in there.
Oh, yeah, no.
Not comfortable.
I have not had to put anything
not
in
a
there.
Good. It's not a party.
Yeah, no. Exit only, that's it.
Yeah.
And even when the doctor puts his finger in there, that's not friendly at all. Suddenly feel like you have to poop all of a sudden, like, are his fingers in there?
Yep. Come on, man.
What?
I just bet you her other videos are more attention-getting.
Oh, she's things. Since deleted this one, is what I just saw.
Right. Hmm. It was squash week.
She said she couldn't go to the hospital the night it happened.
Anyone seen zucchini?
Why is that?
I think people are embarrassed. Typically, when something like this happens and it takes them days to get there to the hospital, it's because they were embarrassed.
They're hoping somehow say, get rid of it. Yeah.
Well, hey, why are you here?
Wait, the batteries die a little bit, you know, at least. I saw a
that's
meme.
Right, the batteries.
I saw a meme that said, just so you know, nothing accidentally goes in your butt. Signed, the ER staff.
So yeah. True.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that you can't say. I slipped in the shower. It's like, yeah, what was it doing on in the shower, on the shower floor?
I was massaging my toes with it.
This article says that she claimed it still worked after removal.
Wow.
I don't see any reason why not.
Right. Maybe re-gift it, give it somebody else ego.
Well, maybe not that.
Thought of you.
She tried sleeping with it inside, but the toy continued to buzz throughout the night.
Vibrating bed.
That led to some serious tossing and turning.
I would think so, yes.
She finally went to the hospital the next morning.
And they said, what's up your butt?
The doctor struggled to get it out.
Struggled. Wow. Relax, lady.
Struggled.
Relax. Give her a couple of drinks first. Here you go. Good.
Well, first, you got to just put her out.
You do.
Just,
yeah.
You do.
You can't. Like, all right.
Or at least record it. Hear the sounds.
This is...
like a chainsaw gone wild.
So their only option after they couldn't get it out was a surgical procedure.
Oh.
Not worth it.
I would think he who pulls it out of her butt is now King of England.
A surgical procedure.
Surgical procedure.
That means cutting, right?
Oh, right. Yes. I would think.
Ah,
I don't know what else that would mean to me. I have no idea.
Yeah.
That was my thought.
You couldn't get a vacuum cleaner hose? Like,
or disassemble it while it's in there. You know,
blow air in the other end.
Oh, disassemble it. Try that.
What do you mean, disassemble?
Take it apart piece by piece. Like pull the cut works out of it. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's more difficult.
I think that's more difficult.
Maybe you got a safe cracker. You know what you do? You just lasso the sucker, attach it to the bumper of someone's car, and just take off.
Oh, my God. She woke up from surgery to find her vibrator next to her in a plastic bag.
Ew.
For keeps, right? Right.
And to her surprise, the thing still had some battery life.
Right.
And then when those things last a long time.
And then when she broke one, it's like a Corona bottle.
How do you know?
What? What? I'm just, from what I hear.
What? When did you hear it? In your room?
AJ, you ready to blow?
Yes. What?
AJ.
AJ, 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 AJ,
what?
AJ,
what?
What are we doing?
What is this?
This
is something that Phil found. It's a TikTok thing. Supposedly, you cannot blow out a candle if you have a stocking over your face.
Okay.
So I'm going to attempt to try and blow out this candle.
Gonna mess up your hair.
Yeah, I had to put a hat, so we're good.
Like a Christmas stocking?
That's why there's a hat.
No, there. A stocking.
Like a tight?
Like nylon stockings, yes.
Oh, all right. Yeah. I don't know. We call them tights.
A Christmas. Whatever you call them. Whatever.
Damn, little guy.
It's like a light the candle.
The candle. Now, here, keep in mind. Why don't you wait to light the candle? All right, whatever.
Okay.
I just don't know how long we could have a burning candle in the studio before the sprinkler systems come on.
Nah, we're fine.
We've had birthday cakes in here.
Yeah, yeah, those are seconds.
Okay. Yeah, happy birthday is like 16 seconds long.
Right.
Do you need an extra hand? Because we have an intern in here.
Yeah. Why don't you put the stocking
on. I'll put the stocking on my head.
An intern who has no name, so we're going to call him Nona.
Intern Nona.
He's not here long enough to get a name.
This is true.
He's here for 4 weeks, like 3 more weeks.
Right.
I'm not going to name him.
I've been here 3 years. I still don't have a name. So.
We have names
he's
for
like
you.
Bangs and teeth.
That
one over there.
They're all great names. Hard worker.
You know
the worst part was?
Drunk.
Having to buy one of these things.
Firefall.
Yep.
AJ's not under any sprinklers, from what I can tell, so I think it's good.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm gonna put the. I'm not gonna put the stocking over my head.
Okay. Nona, do you know where the lighter is? The candle? That's gonna be your job to light the candle.
The lighter and candle's over here.
Oh, looks like you can rob a bank.
I did.
Yeah, good.
Awesome. Right.
So in the
I'm ready.
Oh my god.
That's amazing.
You
give me
look,
money.
Yes. You look like
right
that
now,
person.
I probably look like someone on the wall in the post office.
Well, right. No, they don't have no. It's a mugshot.
Well,
they tell you to take the stocking off before the mugshot.
Someone you probably... See, I can't even pronounce the words. Okay, so give me your money to sit there.
Really? Like, is that how you're talking, or can you talk right?
Because it's tight. Yeah. I know one of these before.
I'll tell you what you look like.
What?
In the early days of, like, 3D video gaming, they could only give, like, the boxer one facial expression.
Right?
And that's what you look like. It's like, I'm going to push you in the face.
I'm going to call myself mush face.
It's just like AJ's face has been flattened.
Okay. My whole face is contorting, which is why I just do this now, right?
What?
My whole face is contorting, which is why I do this now.
Contorting?
Contorting, yeah, because don't be mushed because you're in here.
Nona's lighting the candle. Placing the candle in front of AJ, who has a nylon stocking.
Don't burn the stocking.
Happy birthday to you. Okay. All right, here we go, ready?
Here we go. You almost did it. We're getting flicker. Just blow it. Wouldn't you want
to
get closer?
Yeah, I'm going to spin his hand.
Get closer.
Careful. Don't light that stocking on fire, man.
Although that would be funny.
Hey!
They got it!
Oh.
I'm pretty sure that was saliva and not air, but we'll allow it.
Oh. What do you do? Leave it on.
No. Obviously, I'm not going to stick any banks up lately.
Yeah, we were... what's that? You're going to not set up any banks lately?
I was not going to
stick
rob.
Up.
Stick up.
Stick up.
Man, this is the stick up, Shane.
Stick up, right.
Oh. I will say we did about 80% of that correct. The only thing that was missing from the challenge is someone has to hold the extra part of the stocking back so it's extra tight.
Oh, we should do it again.
It was pretty tight on my face. So
all right,
saw.
We saw.
Yeah.
I'll help.
But that's not how the challenge works.
But we didn't do it right.
Right? What are you saying?
Yeah, we got to try it again.
What?
Yeah.
He was ready to never see that again.
But he put it in his lunch bag. He put the nylon stocking in his lunch bag.
It's clean. I just bought it yesterday.
Who's a hungry boy?
Not that hungry. All right, so we're doing this now.
All right, putting it back on.
All right.
Right, so Nona's got to pull on the back of it.
Yeah, so Nona will light the candle and hand it to you, and then he will pull on the back of the nylon. So just make sure that you have it down enough.
Yeah, so it doesn't yank
that it
off.
It doesn't pull off.
Well, hold on to it. How's that?
No, it's not the same.
You got to pull
it. I can hold on to it so it doesn't pull off my head.
Okay. All right. However you want to do it.
Yeah. What I've seen is that bottom little. Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Okay.
That gets pulled up or down?
Just back. Just back.
Just back.
Pull back.
All right.
Just keep pulling back further.
Can you grab it closer and do tighter?
Yeah, just pull it. Yeah.
His eyebrows just went up about 6 inches.
Instant facelift.
Can you breathe?
I can breathe.
He looks dead.
Yeah! Wow! He did it again!
Holy crap.
I'm impressed, AJ.
Thank you.
You're one hell of a blower.
That's good. Thank you, sir.
This was the Chaz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Chaz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.